Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Chad,
how do you use your difference to make a difference?
I mean, I think that's a, you know, ever-changing question. I think right now what I'm doing is, you know, I've always wanted to help people any way I can. You know, I wanted to write a book before I wrote this book, and I used to be like, well, what am I going to write about? How can I, what knowledge do I have to give someone? So, you know, this, the selling of the company, kind of the culmination of that 10-year journey, kind of really, you know, no pun intended, closed a chapter in my life and started a new one. So I try to give back to, you know, small business owners, people who are starting their own business and really trying to overcome those initial obstacles that can be a lot difficult, you know, transitioning from especially a W-2 to an employee or just from college to, you know, trying to start your own company. So that's the difference that I try to make right now, is giving back as much knowledge and experience as I can to young and ambitious people, or even, you know, people our age or older that are ambitious and trying to make that journey.
How you day? How you day? That was the voice of Chad Price. I hope you're ready for a lot of analogies today, because Chad is a former athlete, and some of you might know this. I'm also a former athlete, and we talk about different metaphors and analogies that the business world shares with the sports world, all in service of really helping you update your business vernacular. How can you translate success in business and in life using sports analogies? There are a lot of resources that you can always see in the show notes, so please make sure to head over there. I also encourage you to think about moments in your life that you consider pivotal and think about how you can extract lessons from there. If some of you are struggling to tell your stories, those pivotal moments in your life usually have the genesis of what becomes your story, right? So use this as a way to see yourself, but also I think you should also ensure that you're learning as much from all the listeners. That's what the podcast is for, to connect you to the world through the guests and to be able to expand your mind and your world. I hope you enjoy the episode. I hope you share with your loved ones, and I hope you tune in next week when we have another episode. All right. Thank you so much and enjoy. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's guest is Chad Price. Now, Chad is a seasoned serial entrepreneur with a very, very impressive track record. His career spans well over a decade, and if you're very visual like I am, I want you to picture this. Building Kettlebell Kings from scratch, which is his company, and orchestrating that into a three-year multi-million dollar acquisition. This happened back in November 2021, and today it stands tall as a thriving international company making waves in the esteemed Fortune Inc. 5000 list. He's also an author. We're going to be talking about his book today. And in his book, we're going to be talking about how you can use things like sports concepts and translating that into the business landscape. His book is called Preparing for Battle. As always, we have every resource that the guests loves and uses in the show notes. But without further ado, I want to welcome Chad Price onto the show. Welcome, Chad.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to meet you.
Pleasure is mine. The pleasure is mine. So you were an athlete. I was an athlete. You know, I grew up playing sports, and I like you, like using sports in my everyday vernacular. But I'm very curious about your background. What was your sport of choice?
So, I mean, I grew up playing literally every single sport. Like, I'm talking about baseball, soccer, track, you name it. I played it growing up. In high school, I focused more on basketball and football, and I ended up getting a scholarship to play football at Rice in Houston. Mm-hmm. And so, I use a lot of kind of those lessons from a lot of different sports, but especially, football is probably kind of the sport of choice, just because that's what I played the most of.
Yeah. And so when you were, you got the scholarship at Rice, and then you had a business degree at Rice University, and you then were in corporate America for a little bit, and then you founded your kettlebell company. What was that journey like? How did you decide that you weren't going to go pro and then you were going to go in corporate America?
Well, I did play a little bit after college, and I don't know if you guys remember, it's probably it's telling people how old I am and making me look bad, but there was a league called the All-American Football League that I was a part of, and it was kind of like a development league for the NFL, if you will. Yeah. And you had to have a college degree. It was a new concept on a professional league, and I was part of the team in Houston, and then that league folded after the league was supposed to have already started. So, I was doing promotional videos and kind of touring the city, getting everybody pumped up about this league, and then it was like, hey, no check. So that pretty much hung my cleats up for me at that point. And I already kind of knew that football was always just kind of a way that I could take my, natural skills, develop, hone my athletic abilities, but give myself a better opportunity to have a bigger kind of impact or a bigger business in the future. So I always looked at football, even if I would have made it to, let's say the NFL Hall of Fame, it was just going to be so I could launch some type of big entity and really start my business or professional career.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
The reason I wanted to pause there a little bit is a lot of times the listeners are from different parts of the world, but NFL, the National Football League, has various iterations of developmental leagues. The Rock has its, the XFL now, right. I believe. Yeah. And so I just wanted to explain that to people who might not understand that. But sorry, carry on.
Yeah. So after I stopped doing that, and even while I was doing that, I was already working. So I had an outdoor sales job at the time. I was selling T1 internet, which another thing people probably don't even know what it is anymore. And then I was also selling just different types of softwares and different types of outdoor sales jobs in Houston. That led also to me starting into construction. I liked that a lot more. And I was, one of the things that I had a background in growing up. I did a lot of working outside. I'm, from a small town where there was no like kind of staying indoors all day when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. So construction was kind of came naturally to me. It was team based and, it was get out there, get the job done and go home type of deal. And I really liked doing that. And I was project manager there for a while. And then I tried to get into oil and gas project management. Didn't necessarily get into the project management side of it, but I did get into the operational side. And so I was working in operations in oil and gas. Basically, you're monitoring a control room of gas pressures and pipelines across the country. And I was doing that for a few years before I kind of understood, okay, this is what a corporate America job is like. And this is the schedule. This is kind of the careers and opportunities even above where I currently was that are available to me. And I knew if I wanted to start my own company that I was going to have to do it now. I knew I could always kind of come back and invest the time and effort needed to climb the corporate ladder, but I wasn't going to always have the opportunity to kind of start something and watch it grow for the next 20 years. And that's really what, my ultimate passion was behind, was really trying to see something, blossom into a global brand or take a team from, something small to, world champions. That's always kind of the sports analogy I like to use.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's stay with the sports analogy here. You talk often about how their strengths an athlete can bring to entrepreneurship and startup culture. So what strengths, particularly in your life, did you translate to the startup world?
I mean, so many. I think when you come from playing sports, you're used to being, I think, on both sides of wins and losses. So for me, it's not about today's wins or losses. I expect to have to lose. Like if we've never lost anything, then we haven't been trying that hard, or we haven't been playing the toughest competition. And so I think having that kind of mindset that I'm going to go out and compete every single day and get better every single day or whatever I'm choosing to do is something that comes more natural to an athlete. When I work out to go get to play football, you know, I'm working out thinking about how I'm going to utilize this in my football skills. And when I'm doing the same thing for business, it's just a matter of kind of determining what working out is and what is practice and getting better. What does that look like? And once you develop that, it's just a habit, you know, it becomes just a behavioral pattern that you're trying to continue to develop better and better decision-making and better habits. And I was able to translate that to my partners and to, you know, employees and vendors and things like that, just because that concept comes a lot easier from sports.
Now, obviously the company you first started was, I mean, you got it to a multi-million dollar acquisition part, but it was with kettlebells. It was, I think it was like a natural almost, you know, transformation.
For sure.
Yeah. Because so it was working out. Did you just stumble across some kettlebells one day and you're like, huh?
Well, I mean, I think and even for me, it was a learning curve involved there. And, you know, I did start another company at the same time. And for me, it was a good thing. I started a nail salon at the exact same time I started the kettlebell company. And so I ran them both simultaneously for 8 years. And I was building online communities. That's really kind of how I look at it. And the online communities, one community was around nail art and creative and luxury nails and, right, you know, a service-based kind of industry. And the other one was around, you know, fitness and health and staying in shape and trying to give a kind of an urban lifestyle feel to a fitness brand and to a kettlebell enthusiast community. So it was differences and likenesses that I was able to kind of bounce off one another and really kind of just learn what it is to build that kind of stuff. So for me, the kettlebell was just another tool that was used as a centerpiece for that community. And I like to look at it like that. And I've been able to help other brands and things like that now, especially by kind of taking that same concept is what is the centerpiece that this community is here for? And then what types of content and what types of value can you bring to the people that really kind of evolve around this one centerpiece or idea?
I love the fact that you described it as a tool. You know, I said earlier, I grew up as an athlete. Basketball is the sport I play the most. And I play football, but it was a different football from what you call it. Right?
Yeah.
I'm from Nigeria, so but yes, it eventually became basketball. And interestingly, in the tool enough, my father, my pops was a diplomat. So I grew up in 5 countries, 4 continents. And it was a way for me to fit, you know, not, I guess, fit in. And, you know, when you're a kid, you're trying to figure out your identity, especially when you have different accents or you're like, you're figuring out, you know, yourself. And I remember approaching basketball from the lens of making friends and understanding what, you know, what this defender needed, what the ball needed. And there was a point, as all college and high school athletes come to the realization of where, you're not gonna make it. And so I was thinking of the translatable skill and a tool. And it really went back to understanding the needs of the people around me right now. You know, I have a company that is focusing on helping people connect effectively across cultures and fighting against systemic oppression and different things. And it wasn't until I sat down and did what you just said and picked up on other passions that I've always had simultaneously. And I realized, yeah, you've always been doing this for a while. It's just a matter of now translating those tools you learned in playing basketball and figuring out what makes that person tick, what is considered offense, defense here, what's a block, what's all those things. And I think if a lot of people did what you just said, they'll be surprised about the evolution and the passions that they'll find.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Especially if you come from an athletic background, you've already gone to so many practices. You practiced when you didn't want to. You know what practice is, though, and that makes it easier. So when you're trying to start a new brand or a company, or, you know, you're trying to do something that you haven't done before, or even worse, no one's ever done before, it's going to be difficult, and you don't know what that practice necessarily looks like. So I try to look at it like, hey, let's get out there and do, and then revisit that. And so in football, you watch a lot of film. That's one thing you do. You watch every single practice. There's no such thing as not watching the practice from the day before. So that type of mindset to me is just natural. And I think for business, it's the same thing. I'm never not checking out what we did last week, and I'm never not measuring that against the week before. Like, that's not even a concept that I would even go into business with. And some people do, just because they don't have that background or that level of detailed discipline to analyze your actions and behaviors so that you can actually make measurable improvements on, you know, on some type of scale, whatever that scale is.
Fact. Well, what did it feel like when you were able to scale the company enough to grow and then sell?
I mean, obviously it feels great. It's, you know, it's one of those things where it's a, I guess it feels like, you know, sending your kid off to college, I guess, or, you know, watching your kid slam dunk for the first time, maybe, or something like that. You feel proud that someone else sees value in what you've built. You know, you kind of already know it when you have a large community like we built. So, you know, we've kind of gotten those milestones of pride and of people showing us the appreciation they have for, you know, what we've built as a brand. But, you know, when you make it to kind of an acquisition point, it really is kind of closing the book or, you know, signing your name on the line, and you and the people that started it actually, you know, you get to benefit from all your hard work. So it's a great thing. I think it's not necessarily what everyone has to do. Like, you know, some people want to own the company and, you know, have it be a legacy brand that they keep in their family or in their portfolio of businesses forever. And I think that's the beauty of entrepreneurship and businesses. We all get to kind of make that journey for ourselves, make those decisions for ourselves. When we started the company, we had no idea we wanted to be acquired or would be acquired. And just going through that process kind of taught us so many things that at this point, you know, I don't think me or my partners that started this, you know, I don't think we're limited to anything.
Yeah, I love that. Okay. And then obviously you got to the point where you felt like it was time to write a book, and your book is called Preparing for Battle. And, you know, if when you're doing a deep dive of it, you know, the summary says inside one of the things you learn is how to use your personal story as your foundation for success, which you just discussed. But there's a particular thing that stood out to me. You talk about how to transform yourself into a true leader who fights with vigor. Why did you word it that way?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when I use the term prepare for battle, I don't use that lightly, especially when it comes to entrepreneurship. I think it is a battle. I think if you're not trying to fight on behalf of your company, then you don't really deserve it. So, you know, it's like a fumble, right? If you're not fighting for the ball, you're definitely not going to get it. So I don't even know why you're here. Like, you might as well just stand back and watch what's going on. And that's kind of how I look at businesses. When you're ready to dive in, it is like that. You're going to have to fight for customers. You're going to have to fight for market space. You know, you're going to have to fight even more when you start than, you know, once you become a recognized brand, because why should someone give you a chance? You're going to have to kind of fight for the reputation and the credibility of who you are in that space. So I look at that as, everyone knows when they're going to do something hard, they need to prepare for it. You know, if you were going to actually have to go to war, you would be at home practicing, you would be at home doing pushups and shooting your gun, whatever you think, you know, getting prepared is. And it's the same thing for business. So I think you need to kind of prepare yourself for a higher level of intensity of engagement, decision-making, obstacles that you're going to have to overcome. All of the above is going to kind of intensify once you take on that journey.
So how can an aspiring change maker leader come up with the things they need to put in their arsenal, the tools for their arsenal to fight for this?
I think it's a lot of different ways, especially nowadays when you have, you know, access to information is no longer the problem with starting a business. You know, everyone has access to the internet. There's more information available to you, you know, on your cell phone than humans had in the history of humanity, you know, for the majority of the history. So when you're talking about trying to prepare for whatever it is you want to do, I think that's where your personal experiences and trying to fill in the gaps of who you are kind of overlaps. Is I don't know what you need to improve on for you to be a good leader. What you need to improve on might not be the same thing that I need to improve on to be a good leader. And having the self-awareness and having the vulnerability to go out and assess that and have other people assess that and then work on those things that you can improve is, you know, that to me, that's going to be the way you're going to have to live life moving forward anyway. You're not going to be the same person you were when you started this. You are becoming something bigger than what you were. And that's what the business is. That's what you're wanting the business to do as well. So I think as a leader, you have to grow kind of with that if you want to sustain it.
Yeah. Self-awareness, it sounds like you're saying, will be very key. I mean, it's why you started off with the personal story. You need to understand your strengths, and I'm not even trying to say weaknesses, but areas of opportunities, areas for improvement. And then, you know, I'm sure maybe build a team around that. What information are you're filtering as you're assessing yourself? Do you find that it's beneficial to have mentors or external people that know you and are able to find those hidden spots you might not notice yourself?
I mean, absolutely. You know, I think, and when I say mentor, I think some people, I'm not really big on like idolization, right? Like, I don't think, you know, Martin Luther King wasn't a perfect person,
right?
But I think he could be a great mentor to someone who wants to be a public speaker. You know, I think there's ways to look at people and ways to gain knowledge and value from people other than trying to, you know, personalize it and make it about who they are as a person. And that's kind of how I look at mentorship. So my mentors have come in all different, you know, types and ways, from my coaches to vendors I've had, people who've been at different kind of levels of a company. So, you know, one company, my mentor might be the person that's actually working on my account because he knows so much more about this topic than I do. So if I have a question about this topic, he is my mentor when it comes to this, because he's been doing it for 20 years. I haven't. I'm smart enough to recognize he knows more than most people that I know. So I'm going to use that resource. But then other times, you know, your mentor might be your father. Your mentor might be, you know, someone that's a lot closer to you that you just trust that they have your best interest in mind. But there's no kind of right or wrong way to do it. I think you take those assessments and you use that to build a regimen of things that you're going to do to improve on yourself. And when you have the goal of improving yourself, can you ever really go wrong? You know, like if you're a kinder person, you're not going to be, you know, mad at yourself for being kinder. If you're trying to achieve something that's better than what you currently are. So I just look at it as people that help me identify the things that I need to communicate more efficiently or to present myself in a way that gets me to my goals faster. Cause ultimately as a business leader, I want to get to my goal. Like if I have to yell at you to get to my goal, I'll yell. If I have to pat you on the back, I'll pat you on the back, whatever it is to get to my goal. Like it's all positive, but you know, I'm trying to communicate whatever's needed to ultimately achieve success.
Yeah. And then, okay. So with success comes challenges, right? Then you got to push through these trenches, and in, you know, in warfare, it's this concept of, you know, defense and understanding how to be resilient and deal with the opposing forces. When that inevitable opposing force comes, yeah, you revenue is down, or you lose a big client, or there's a loss in your family. How do you navigate that as an entrepreneur or a team of entrepreneurs?
Well, I mean, because I played sports, I look at every single one of those as an opportunity. You know, it's almost like if you didn't have those chances, you wouldn't have an opportunity to kind of galvanize your team. You know, I'll give you an example from Kettlebell Kings. We started the company, you know, we're building the company out. We had been operating out of a public storage for the first year and a half of the company. So, you know, go over to a public storage, lift up the public storage and go in there, try to find the kettlebell because there's no room to sort things. It's just a huge, you know, mess of kettlebells.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
In there, to be honest, but you find the kettlebell, you take that to UPS or whatever store in your car and you ship that out. We graduated to a warehouse. year and a half after having the warehouse, we finally got our first employee. So we set everything up for the biggest Black Friday that we could possibly have. We'd order more inventory. We ordered swag for the first time. We had, you know, this huge operation. This is going to be it. We trained two different people to show up. A couple different things happened. One of the people that we wanted to work with no longer worked with us. We had another guy who was supposed to work the entire Black Friday weekend, which is, you know, a holiday weekend. And this particular guy, day of Black Friday, decides he just is not going to call, not going to show up, just no call, no show, doesn't exist anymore. So we're calling to check in, like, hey, is everything okay at the warehouse? Thinking, okay, we get to spend time with our families, and, you know, it's Thanksgiving, we get to, you know, hang out and spend time. And ultimately he never called or never answered or anything. So, you know, I called my partner, and only two of my partners are actually here in town, or one of my partners, I should say, is only here in town. One of them is not. And so he and I were literally up there sending out kettlebells for 12 hours a day for the next four or five days. And it was exhausting. It was terrible. It was exhausting. But after that time period, having gone through that, we were never the same again. Like, he never questioned my loyalty to the company. He never questioned my decision-making process, whether right. I had the best interests of the company at heart. And I never questioned his, even when we butted heads. And it's because we went through that together. And if that guy would have showed up and done his job like he was supposed to, we may have never had that chance to galvanize and become together as kind of a one single force against the world. And I think that's a lot of times the hardest part about creating that culture is having those opportunities where people feel like, man, we overcame something that was difficult. And you never know when that opportunity is going to present itself. And to me, that's when a leader steps in and says, like, yeah, I know this sucks. It sucks bad, but we're the team to do it. We're the people, you know, we're the chosen ones that we can overachieve. We can overcome this. You know, we can overcome any obstacle that's put in front of us. And this is just one of the many obstacles we'll have to overcome on this journey.
But that is a skill set though, right? I mean, because in my consulting experience, sometimes I'll work with leaders who don't like delivering bad news, right? Yeah. They're really just anything conflict related, whether it's because they don't want to seem incompetent or whether it's because it's just, they haven't, you know, they've just been experiencing so much success and they don't want to say that, or they don't even want to have to let go of someone, either of these difficult things. That leader needs to be able to understand how to manage that type of conflict. But how can that leader get better at that scenario? Because you have the mindset of an athlete to, oh, opportunity, come on, let's go. But yeah, there are people who don't have those lived experiences. They're thinking, oh, now they're going to think I hate them. Oh, they're going to worry about my salary. How are they going to, you know, it's like, it's so many people are not there yet. So what would you tell those people?
I mean, I try to tell people you have to try to get those experiences and those little kind of, you know, I call them micro battles. You have to have those in some type of way, shape or form. To me, sales is a good way to do it, because sales hardens you. I mean, you're going to get told no.
Humbles you. Oh my gosh. Humbles, that was my first job out of college.
It humbles you big time. I mean, it's not personal. It's not personal. You don't personalize it. And you have to get to a point to where you can deliver the information that you have to give someone and be totally fine with them saying, you know, F off. I don't want to have anything to do with you. You suck. And go on about your day, not drained and demoralized and things like that. And that's what you'll need as a leader. So at some point you're going to have to put yourself through this type of crucible, whether it's you understanding that at the beginning and you just accepting that from, you know, as a leader, or you go work for someone and, you know, you put yourself in a difficult role that requires you to overcome a lot of difficult challenges. And that will, you know, that'll set you up to lead the team, because once you've done it, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, if you've got 100 no's or 1,000 no's and 10 yeses or 100 yeses, it doesn't really matter. You're used to both. It's just a matter of, how do I get better at getting more yeses? And I'm trying to get more yeses every single day. And that's what I'm trying to do as a leader. I'm trying to get my agendas and initiatives successfully achieved and at the lowest and efficient way I can every single day. And it's just kind of a way to practice is doing it for somebody else, I think.
So you advocate for leaders to willingly get in the trenches of their business. They need to understand as many levels as they can. It not only gives you a lived experience, but it actually, you know, trains you for any type of adversity that may come about.
Yeah, I mean, I think you should want to also, you know,
is different.
Well, I mean, I think you should want, even if you're, let's say you want to have a company that has a large sales team. If you don't know sales, how are you going to lead that team? Like, if you've never had a sales job or you've never been the lead salesperson on a team, like, you're not the leader for the team. Someone else is going to be the leader for a team. And even that is you having the self-awareness to know that maybe that's not your role then. And so I think if you're putting yourself in the position where you have to be a leader of a particular space or a particular part of your company, you should base that off of your previous experiences and the success you've had in those previous experiences. Right. And if you haven't had success there, then don't put your whole company at jeopardy because you're a terrible sales guy and you want to be the lead salesperson. Like, no, like, you should have to prove it just like an employee would prove it, that your methods are good. And this is why you're leading the team to try to reach a higher level for themselves as well.
Okay, let's focus on the ego here and talk. We're going to keep using sports metaphor here. So there's a recruiting element, right? You play college football, right? There are recruiters that will come around and, hey, I need your son. He's got this. He's going to make my team better. And then you're a CEO. You might have done the self-awareness and you realize, I'm more of a creative. I don't do numbers, right? You know, maybe I need a technical founder for this. What is that process like? You've done that self-personal thing. You've put yourself through certain battles. Maybe you've managed to convince someone to invest or someone else to buy into you, to come on as a partner. What's the recruiting process like? How can you get a team of people to play their positions the right way?
Well, I mean, I like to use the analogy of, you know, being a recruiter, because you are, and I don't think that it ever really stops. So if you think about a football team, you never stop recruiting. Recruiting right. is happening every single year. You know, it's a cycle that continues. And so I think you have to kind of look at yourself like that, like the team that you need to become this, you know, multi-million dollar billionaire, whatever your goals are. That's a large team. That's going to take a lot of, you know, cycles of people. Turnover is going to be, you're not going to start with the same people that you finish with. And so for me, it's just a trial and error process. Mm-hmm. I'm always interviewing. One of the things I like to do is I demo software. I demo vendors all the time. Like, I don't think you lose anything by taking a 30-minute, an hour call if you're trying to look for new information or look to make sure you're doing something in the most effective way. So, you know, I literally would always, especially when I have partners, I would always be scheduling something to try to make sure that we're doing things the most effective way. And I think once you start that as just part of how you live, the mm-hmm. team shows up. So you start finding people who really shine in your system, who really yeah. like, you know, everyone else, like, we had a social media manager for 5 years and then this person came and now they're a team member because you saw the numbers jump when they got there. And to me, that's more of how I've built a team. It's just been trying and trying and trying. And the people that do well in the system, you know, they want to stay because they see success there.
Right. Now, I'm loving this trend we're going, because we've talked about from the individual, we talked about the team now. So you've gone on and recruited, right? You found the right people to play the positions. This is where I see a lot of companies fail. You know, the recruiters might bring on someone based on the idealized version of what the company is.
Yeah.
But when you're in the company, you're like, wait, what you sell me on? Like, this ain't, you told me I was gonna. So, and this is where some CEOs and leaders struggle with, like, that roadmap, that strategy, that compelling vision. How can you keep that alive? Because I don't want to say excuse, but the reason people would give would be, well, you know, I got to make money. I got to raise money. I'm doing this and doing that. Yeah. I trusted you. What do you mean? Like, that's not my thing. How do you make sure that doesn't falter?
Well, I mean, that's where I go back to watching film. So unfortunately for me, and it's just like, you know, on sports teams, if you are messing up in practice and we're watching film and you're just screwing up over and over and over, you're not going to start anymore. And it's not personal to you. It's like, you're not getting the job done and I need the job to be done. So having that kind of openness and just, you know, culture where that's what we talk about, like, you're here to make sure we reach these numbers. These are the numbers we agreed on. These are the KPIs we agreed on, whatever that is. But it's hard when you don't have the experience to quantify what success is. on all of these different levels for all these different perspectives. You know, every single software that you use will try to attribute the success to that software. So you kind of have to internally have your own logic or your own assessment of where the actual dollars you're spending or the resources that you're allocating, where they're showing up for your actual goals. And to me, that's where that kind of watching film on a day-to-day basis, having a clear vision of what success looks like and measuring that, it makes it pretty simple. When you don't see yourself making that, changes have to be made. There's no real option in that situation. It's like, okay, well, we don't have a quarterback because we, you know, we need this guy threw too many picks last year. So we have to have someone else play this role. And sometimes you do have to take a shot. You know, sometimes you're rolling the dice, you're taking, you know, you're making an educated guess. There's not, you know, I don't think anyone goes out and recruits the dream team for their company in the first attempt. I think that's a naive way to look at it. So I look at it as everyone is here to try to do the best job they can. And like I say, the people that want to stay are the people that want to actually achieve success for your goals as well. You know, I don't think any company wants to, you know, in the long term, just keep taking your money and screwing you over. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's your job as the CEO or as the leader to identify, are they doing that? And if they're not, you know, what do you need to do to change that? And if they can't change it and make it what you want it to be, then you have to just go somewhere else. And I think that's what it boils down to.
You're talking about creating a culture of accountability and having metrics for things that need to be taken accountable for. And even to your point, the one of the points you made, even if you're just starting and you realize you're not going to be the big, big company, first of all, you still have to be able to communicate a vision that says, hey, look, we're here now. This is where we want to go. This is what we'll need. Or if you're guessing, this is what I believe we will need to get there. Now, it may change, but your job as a leader, if we keep doing this, I think we can get there. Like, you know, like we can use Deion Sanders for people that don't know American football here. But, you know, he just moved from HBCU to Colorado right now. And they won more than people thought initially. But when they asked him, he says he's about 5 to 6 or 7 players away. Because I'm assuming he's already done the assessment and that, we need an O-line. We need more players there. We're too small here. But he still needed to be able to convince people to come for that first year so that maybe the second and third year could be better. That's also another art where you have to like help people understand that there's going to be some warfare here and we won't get there the first year, but I need you to believe me long enough to see and be patient enough for the fruits to be born.
I mean, absolutely. Like the first paperclip company that we hired, we knew that they were going to be temporary. We knew that, you know, this is not the company that's going to take us global. Like this is, they're not it. We can't afford the company that we interview. And that's, to me, that's where the interviews come in as well, is because I've interviewed so many companies that are in this space. I know what's out there. I know how much the costs are. I know what types of packages I think another thing people struggle with is trying to compare companies apples to apples, and it's not always apples to apples because they have some overlapping services, some that don't have overlap, different strategies in which they try to do things. So for me, it's always about trying to learn as much as I can about what I actually need from someone like this, and then what the offering is, what the market value of that offering is, and then who can do that the best. And that, to me, that's just like a math problem. Once you solve it, it's like, okay, well, this is about how much it should cost for me to get a lead. This is about how much it should cost for me to get a sale, blah, blah, blah. And I then measure every single other person off of those metrics. So it's like, if you can't run faster than the guy from last year, I'm not even recruiting you. And that's really kind of where you get to when you just continuously go through that process.
This is so fascinating to me. I could do this all day, but like Captain America, I guess. But let's pivot here a little bit, right? So I want to use the pandemic as a framing for pivot. I looked at the year that your company sold. It was right in the smack dab of the pandemic. It was maybe like a year in there. At what point did you realize that if you didn't pivot, that you were going to sink? And then how did you make the decision to pivot? Because you still were able to be successful during a moment where people weren't sure about the viability of their companies.
Well, I mean, luckily for us, we always saw ourselves as you know, I think the terms exist now that we were doing before they even existed. So mm-hmm. You know, we had fitness influencers before that was a term. We had, you know, social influencers, and we're doing social media kind of influencer marketing a long time before that became like a generic way to build a following. So, I mean, when we are trying to think about any of the overall, like, let's say, community size of the brand, all we ever wanted to be was a location that could generate content for that large community. Mm-hmm. And in achieving that goal, to me, everything else would kind of follow that. So we wouldn't have to know all of the specifics if we could achieve that kind of initial goal, because it's not an ego-based decision-making process. It's a fact-finding mission from that community itself. And ultimately, that's what we were able to set up.
Yeah, it actually, in retrospect, it probably even set you all up, because people were, you know, indoors and needing to do something to get outside of their heads, and you were right there.
Exactly. So yeah. So when COVID came, it was like, oh, you want more of us? You want more of this? You know, we were already there, and not to mention the fact that we never really wanted to be a retail space or a physical brand. So like, because we saw and we grew up, you know. Fortunately for us, we were, you know, I remember when Facebook first came out, you know, I got a Facebook page, and I remember thinking like, man, I'm about to use this to make some money. You know, like, I was like, this is crazy. It was like the community I can build on here, and everyone's going to have a profile. Like, I mean, just my mind was just racing with ideas. And I think it was the same for my business partners. And that's where our concept overlapped, where we knew the potential of an online community was bigger than any retail store that we could ever build.
Yeah.
And we knew it could be a global representation of something that was bigger than ourselves, and something that we never have a chance to grow something as large in Austin, for example. There's just not enough people here.
Yeah.
So because the entire operation and infrastructure of the company was set up that way, COVID was just a bonus. It was you know, more people wanted to do home fitness than ever. More people contacted us. When they announced quarantine, within 20 minutes, we sold out of every single product. So, you know, for us, it was like, man, you know, we used to joke like the best thing that happened to us would be another COVID. So unfortunately for us, it was a good time, because we sold product, and the hard part was just getting things through the port so that we
could fulfillment and all that.
Fulfill the demand. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're like in the book, you also talk about creating a business that values, you know, that creates a true value for its customers. So it sounds like you understood that from the beginning. And so when you have that relationship with your customers, you can't build a team and forget about the end users at the end of the day. You have to simultaneously be understanding that as well, as well as, I imagine, your competition. Okay? Where has the competition gotten better at? Are they faster, quicker?
Yeah.
How can we up there? Where can people get your book? Because I feel like they'll probably want to connect with you on different fronts. So please plug away, like your book, communities, your companies.
Sure. You can find me on chadprice.com. That's my website. So you can find kind of everything from there. It'll lead you to my book, to my different companies, projects I've worked on, you know, things you can find on my podcast, things like this that I've been talking and doing these types of things. But then I'm also social media channels, Real Chad Price, LinkedIn, Chad Price. The book is on Amazon, Preparing for Battle. So if you're, you know, looking to purchase that, you can download it. I think it's $3 right now for the e-download. So not a heavy investment for you. But, you know, the main goal of the book, I think, is to really get you in the mental space required to kind of tackle a difficult journey. So, you know, entrepreneurship, and I put the basics of kind of building a business and the building blocks of basic business. But, you know, I think more importantly, the lessons that you have in your life and tying those lessons to what makes you a strong leader, or what brings your kind of unique, not only say uniqueness, what brings the attributes that you can most effectively help people with and effectively lead people. I think that'll make your journey a lot easier. So I try to map that out for you in the book, and even give you a workbook at the end so that you can write your ideas down and try to build that kind of vision and help you communicate that to your team.
We love a workbook here, so I appreciate that. I'll make sure I put all that in the show notes. But my last question for you, Chad, is the question I ask all my guests. My personal mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. So, Chad,
how do you use your difference to make a difference?
I mean, I think that's a, you know, ever-changing question. I think right now what I'm doing is, you know, I've always wanted to help people any way I can. You know, I wanted to write a book before I wrote this book, and I used to be like, well, what am I going to write about? How can I, what knowledge do I have to give someone? So, you know, this, the selling of the company, kind of the culmination of that 10-year journey, kind of really, you know, no pun intended, closed a chapter in my life and started a new one. So I try to give back to, you know, small business owners, people who are starting their own business and really trying to overcome those initial obstacles that can be a lot difficult, you know, transitioning from especially a W-2 to an employee or just from college to, you know, trying to start your own company. So that's the difference that I try to make right now, is giving back as much knowledge and experience as I can to young and ambitious people, or even, you know, people our age or older that are ambitious and trying to make that journey.
Chad Price, constantly preparing people for battle in an ever-evolving business world. Thank you so much, though. This has been fun. I really, really enjoyed going back and forth between the sports world and the business world. But, you know, to your credit, they're very translatable skills. So, you know, I really wish you the best of luck with your book. And I can definitely see why people follow you and are influenced by your background.
I appreciate it. It was awesome. You were a great host. I loved all the sports analogy, so it's perfect. It's perfect for me.
Well, thank you. The pleasure is mine. Kings, queens, and royalty. Until next time, use a difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.